We have a full courtroom for such a short docket for us, but I see everybody's already situated, so let me do the instructions generally, and then I'll ask for announcements later. At the Third Court of Appeals, our proceedings are recorded, but it's not for those of you in the back to hear us, but it is for preservation issues, so the audio recordings will be available on our court website in a few days. Parties, y'all have already let council know about the time allocations, is that right? Okay. We're going to go 15 and 5, and then, unless you've told us otherwise. For those of you in the audience, please turn off all cell phones or other devices that could cause noise out of respect for the attorneys that are arguing their cases. And with that, we'll get started. This is cause number 0318360CV, Grayling Grant et al. Versus Governor Abbott et al. And announcements, please, for the appellants.
Justin Renshaw for the appellants.
Thank you, Mr. Renshaw. And again, you've given our time allocations?
Yes, Justin.
Okay, and are you going to? Okay, thank you. And for the appellees?
Evan Green for the state appellees, the governor and the commissioners.
Okay.
And Mary Margaret Rowart for the appellee intervenors, the Galveston, Texas City Pilots.
Okay. And are y'all dividing time as well?
Yes, 13 and 7.
Okay. So when the yellow light comes on, no matter who it is that we're talking about, you've got 2 minutes left in the argument that you have allocated. And with that, we will get started. Mr. Renshaw, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Justice Goodwin. May it please the court. The Galveston, Texas City Pilots enjoy monopoly power under both the Texas Transportation Code and in how they operate outside of the law. Neither the Board of Pilot Commissioners nor the governor will disrupt that, notwithstanding the clear prohibition against monopolies in this state under Article 1, Section 26 of our Constitution, which actually dates back to the original days of the Republic of Texas. And that's why we're here. There is no monopoly of lawyers. There is no monopoly of doctors. There's no monopoly of architects or engineers or nail salons or dog trainers or any of the other myriad licensed professions in Texas. This is a case of first impression involving four primary issues, which we've outlined in our briefing. Is the governor immune from suit for delegating his statutory duties to individuals not subject to the Texas Administrative Procedure Act? Is an admitted private monopoly over the ship pilotage constitutional despite Article 1, Section 26?
Could you repeat the first sentence?
Is the governor immune from suit for delegating his statutory duties to individuals not subject to the Administrative Procedure
Act? Not subject to APA.
Correct.
Okay.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Of course.
What specific authority allows the governor to adopt any rules for the Galveston County pilots?
He is the state agency who is responsible for appointing the boards, the board, and as well as for the licensing. He issues the licenses to the pilots themselves.
But all he does is actually accept the recommendation from the board and signs that. I mean, I'm trying to understand what it is that you're asking or suing the governor to do.
Well, to do what he is obligated to do, which was basically ensure that his appointees are acting within the confines of the law, and that's not what is happening.
So you're not suing the governor, believing that he has the authority to make the rules that the board is supposed to comply with?
The statute says that the board shall issue rules. Now, the board being outside of the APA, if it makes any rules, rules are defined by the APA, and they
okay,
are...
Okay, can I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Of course.
So do you agree that the board does not fall under APA?
Because absolutely. The board is outside of the APA, but they are under the governor, who is within the APA.
Okay, so then going back to what you were talking about, so the rulemaking authority is given to the board in the statute. So the complaint against the governor is that?
Well, he has the power as the state agency under the APA to direct his appointees to make rules or to implement them himself of general applicability. And that's what, that application was denied. That was the exhausting of our administrative remedies, and that's what got us into the trial court. So I'm not exactly sure if I'm understanding the question.
I'm trying to understand what y'all are complaining, or what action the governor, other than making sure that the board complies with, we agree that the board doesn't have to comply with the APA because they're not a state agency. So I'm trying to connect the lines between what is it that the governor, you're complaining that the governor needs to make sure that his appointed board follows through.
That there are rules of general applicability governing the application process outside of the monopoly. And
those are found in the transportation code.
The transportation code says that the board may issue rules with respect to the application process. That does not relieve the governor of his independent obligations as the appointing power and also subject to the APA.
Well, why doesn't the word may and may adopt the rules? I think the quote for the statute is may adopt rules to carry out this chapter. Why doesn't that allow the board to do what it's currently doing?
Because rules are defined by Texas law as being made pursuant to the APA, and with public scrutiny and transparency. And what is happening?
So your argument is dependent upon the APA mandating that the board enact rules?
Well, that the
no. That the governor, because the APA doesn't apply to the...
Correct. The governor is the ultimate authority over the pilotage issue, okay, subject to statute and obviously the case law that is developed over the time. But the governor has distanced himself from this controversy, I guess, and also from the process in general, disavowing any responsibility or any discretion. And that is something that we've briefed, and that raises issues of delegation that, you know, is it a proper delegation to for the governor to do that? Can he just abdicate his responsibility and say, well, I'm out of this, and a board that is not subject to the Administrative Procedure Act can issue rules that aren't rules, but we're going to follow those rules notwithstanding the fact that they haven't been promulgated pursuant to the APA with the governor's blessing or not.
So you're wanting the governor to tell the board to follow the APA rules?
There are no APA rules,
okay,
which in our opinion, there are no rules.
Okay, so, and I'm sorry for re-asking the question. You're asking this court to find that there's jurisdiction over the governor and to remand it to the trial court to tell the governor to tell, I mean, under the statute, he gets to appoint the board and he gets to approve or sign the licenses of the pilots that are recommended by the board, that come out of the board. What is it that he should be telling his board? Do not use Galveston Tex pilots. Do not use this frame. That's my question. What is it that we're wanting the governor to do?
Require his appointees to follow rules of general applicability that are not monopolistic or protective of a monopoly.
Okay.
And in this case, he has that power. He chose not to exercise that power.
And the power would be by
implementing rulemaking. There's right now the rules, the quote-unquote rules that are there, are no rules at all because they are not subject to the APA. They were not implemented pursuant to publication and comment requirements of the APA.
So that's the paragraph 4 of your petition, is that they're invalid and void. That's where that comes in.
Yes.
Okay.
We're not asking for remand. We're asking that this court render. I think remand is futile. We have unconstitutional statutes. We have an unconstitutional procedure. We have an unconstitutional organization. At the trial court, we had asked actually that the case be transferred here so that this court could act as a trial court and expedite this process. Obviously, there are a lot of people that are interested in this case. Remand is not going to solve the problem.
And well, I guess I should let you get to the relief that you... But to render to declare 67 unconstitutional as applied, or the facially, or?
Well, we've got the facial challenge and the as-applied challenge.
And the facial challenge means that even though it doesn't refer to Galtex, but that that's what renders it facially invalid, is that it's reliance on Galtex?
It's the requirement, well, there's two, section 67033 of the Transportation Code is the branch pilot mm-hmm. qualification
right.
section, and that has a requirement that in order to become a branch pilot, you have to have served 2 years as a deputy and
right.
and
to one of the existing.
To one of
right.
the existing. It's a closed
right.
system, and that's the argument that is there's a barrier to entry that unless you were handpicked by the existing Galveston, Texas City mm-hmm. Pilots Association, you are not even going to get an application. If you do not submit an application on the Galveston, Texas City Pilots form, then you're not going to be even considered, and that's what happened to us.
Well, but, I mean, isn't that true for any job that's out there? If you don't submit an application in accordance with its posting, you're not going to be considered for employment.
Not quite. I think the analogy to the law, the legal profession, which we are all familiar with, sir, the state bar has requirements, but an individual law firm may have different requirements. If you wanted to go practice, for example, at Baker Botts, it's going to be different than Vincent and Elkins, it's going to be different than my firm.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you're not going to get the law license. So this is you're not even going to get the license unless you go to that specific outfit.
But wouldn't this be more analogous to, for example, being able to practice in the Western District, to where you can't apply to practice in the Western District unless you have a lawyer from the Western District who sponsors you, and so you wouldn't be able to get a license to practice in the Western
District. But it doesn't require that you be associated with that firm, so it would be analogous if your only means to practice in the Western District were through a firm that was already there and you had to associate with that firm in order to be admitted. So the best analogy, I think, would really be, say there's only one firm in Travis County, one law firm in Travis County. In order to practice law in Travis County, you have to work for that firm. That firm has to bless you in your licensing procedure process at that point. Otherwise, you cannot practice in Travis County. So this is a case of first impression. The other issues, of course, are the facial issue, the as-applied issue. We do feel the issues have been extensively briefed, and we can address any questions, any additional questions the court may have, or proceed to touch on the additional points in.
Well, you're out of
I'm
your
out
initial
of time.
10 minutes. You've got
I'm out of time.
Whatever is left after that.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Plaintiffs are asking this court to invalidate the Galveston Act licensing provisions on grounds that they grant an unlawful monopoly to Galtex, the pilot association. There's no basis for that drastic relief in the laws that are being challenged or in the record. Under the Act, a person must obtain a license in order to provide pilot services to ships that travel through Galveston's ports and waterways. And like many regulated professionals across Texas, a person must satisfy basic fitness and experience requirements to obtain that license. This system has already survived constitutional challenges in the U.S. Supreme Court and Texas Courts of Appeals based on the state's legitimate interest in protecting public safety. Plaintiffs' claims under the Monopoly Clause were rightly rejected for the same reasons. First, with regard to the governor, the trial court correctly dismissed all of the claims against the governor based on his immunity from suit. The claims can't proceed under the ultra-virus doctrine because the governor satisfied his limited duties under the Act, and there's no factual dispute about that.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why does the statute involve the governor at all?
I'm not sure why he's involved. I mean, his limited authorities are to appoint commissioners, which makes sense. He's the highest executive officer in the state. And then he issues and renews and revokes pilot commissions based on the commission's recommendations. So he has sort of a final role there, but that is the limited responsibilities that the governor has.
Do you know historically if that was ever different? Has the governor always been limited to appointing the board and signing the licenses?
I don't believe he's ever had any other additional authorities under the Galveston Act or the comparable acts for the different ports, as far as I'm aware. And the court can't exercise jurisdiction over the governor based on the alleged actions or inactions of his appointees. That's the Hall v. McRaven case that we cite in our brief, and also the Heinrich case, which is sort of the foundation of the ultra-virus doctrine. The claims also cannot proceed against the governor or the commissioners under the APA. Number one, because the plaintiffs haven't challenged any rules in this case. They've only challenged statutes. And the governor does not have rulemaking authority in the first place under the act or otherwise. And I believe the plaintiffs have conceded that the commissioners are not subject to the APA because they lack statewide jurisdiction. There's also no review over the governor's denial of their petition to make rules. That's the Bonzer Lane case that we also cited in our brief. Plaintiffs also cannot prevail on their facial challenge to the pilot qualification statutes under the Monopoly Clause. That clause restricts the state from interfering with the market to allow favored sellers to charge super competitive prices. But it does allow the state to make justified distinctions, providing different privileges to different classes of persons, like an occupational licensing scheme, such as the one that's at issue in this case. And that's the Lens Express case that we cite.
Do you agree that Galtex is a monopoly?
No, I mean, that hasn't been proven on this record to begin with. The plaintiff says that one has to apply through Galtex in order to apply to the board. There's no evidence to that end. You can apply to join Galtex in conjunction with trying to become a pilot, but one does not have to join Galtex. There's no board rule, no statute, nothing that says that anyone has to join Galtex in order to be considered.
Before or after?
Before or after, yes, that's correct.
Is there anyone who's a pilot or deputy pilot who's not a member?
There's nothing in the record on that. My understanding is that that's not the case, that they have traditionally voluntarily joined Galtex.
Okay.
But there's no record of evidence on that issue. The pilot qualification statutes easily meet the Monopoly Clause standard in that they advance public safety. They require pilots to demonstrate adequate experience and fitness before they get licensed. And crucially, the statutes at issue have no bearing on prices, because the board is separately charged with setting the prices for piloting services. So this is not a competitive market in the first place in which the state is restricting people from entering so that one person can charge whatever prices he or she would like to charge. It's not that kind of a market. The Pedersen case and the Olson case, again, cited in our briefs, upheld the state's predecessor statutes against very similar claims here. And indeed, no case has struck down Texas's, certainly, or any other state's similar piloting licensing scheme. And there's no support in the record, much less the text of any statute, for plaintiffs' claims that Galtex is controlling this licensing process. And again, on a facial challenge, the court is limited to looking at the text of the statute as it's written. And those statutes make no reference to Galtex. And although not relevant, what the evidence does show is that Galtex advises the board regarding the need for additional pilots, and that existing branch pilots do make recommendations regarding the most qualified persons for open deputy positions, but the board makes all final recommendations to the governor regarding how many pilots are needed for the port and who qualifies to get a license. And the board also makes final decisions on all deputy appointments as well.
What authorizes Galtex to have additional requirements in the statute?
There's no statutes that authorize. I mean, as a private organization, I think they are entitled to make their own rules, but none of their authority comes from the state. They're a private association.
And they're for profit?
That might be better asked to my colleague. I'm not sure. But
I guess my question then, what authorizes the board? The statute's very specific as to the qualifications.
Right.
The board is required of the pilots that they also have been piloting for 5 years, and that there's
that they're not related to a current Galtex. Mm-hmm. Right, so that comes from their general rulemaking authority. I mean, they have rulemaking authority to carry out the act and to make rules interpreting it, and so the board is allowed to make rules as long as they don't conflict with any of the statutes of the Constitution, which they do not. Finally, plaintiffs can't prevail on their as-applied challenge to Section 67.035, which requires persons to apply to the board in the form and manner required by board rule. Now, plaintiffs claim that the statute is unconstitutional because the board didn't implement rules in accordance with the APA, but the board is not subject to the APA, and plaintiffs nor anyone has a constitutional right to an APA rulemaking procedure. The board does, however, have a formal application process which largely tracks the statutory requirements and has a few extra rules, as Justice Triana noted. And the application's at 641 to 652 in the record, so you can see it's a generally applicable application form that plaintiffs did not ever attempt to follow and fill out. Plaintiffs further claim that this statute somehow unlawfully sustains the Galtex monopoly, but there is no board or rule or practice that requires pilot applicants to join Galtex or to go through Galtex as part of this application process. And the evidence here shows only that the board refused to act on plaintiffs' applications because they were not submitted in the format required by the board. They never actually submitted the board's application. And you can see the evidence at 653 to 654 explaining the only reason that plaintiffs were not considered was because they didn't ever try to apply under the board's rules.
Do you agree that if we were to affirm or agree with your first and third point that we don't even need to get to the monopoly issue?
What being my first and third point? I just want to make sure I...
The governor that...
Sure.
We cannot sue the governor. They cannot sue the governor. Your third point being under the UDJA, they require the board to be a necessary party. The third one under...
I think that there is jurisdiction over the commissioners for these constitutional claims under the ultra vires theory, because they are asserting that the statutes that the board carries out violate the Constitution. So I do think you need to get to the merits of the monopolization claim against the commissioners.
Okay. Do you agree that those would be under the UDJA?
Yes.
Okay. And I thought y'all were arguing that the board was a necessary party.
The board's a necessary party for a rule challenge. I don't think it's clear that they're a necessary party for the UDJA claims, but for the APA claims, they were a necessary party. And finally, even if Galtex had adduced evidence that, I'm sorry, if plaintiffs had adduced evidence that Galtex had a monopoly over this process, and again, there is no evidence along those lines, the Pedersen and Olson cases, which we cited in our brief, embrace the roles of Galtex and associations like them in this process. And Olson specifically held that no unlawful monopoly can even arise from the fact that state-authorized pilots like those here join together to exercise their rights in an association like Galtex. And again, fundamentally, the statutes at issue here have no effect on prices. This is not a competitive market in the first place because the board sets the rates that persons are allowed to charge. So if there are no further questions, the court should affirm the trial court judgment, dismissing the claims against the governor for lack of jurisdiction and granting summary judgment on the merits of those monopolization claims to the commissioners.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Appellees and interveners, the Galveston Texas City Pilots Association, or Galtex, offer two reasons why this court should affirm the trial court's summary judgment. First, Galtex has no illegal monopoly. Rather, the Galtex pilots operate in an advisory role, assisting the Board of Commissioners in carrying out its statutory obligations. Second, the history of the Texas anti-monopoly statute and the provision, and the case law interpreting it indicate that entities that might normally be termed monopolies are not constitutionally prohibited as long as they serve a public safety role. The Galveston Piloted Statute that was enacted in 1985 empowers the board to enact rules or to take any other action necessary to fulfill its statutory obligations. And those obligations are mandated by Section 67.017 of the statute. And to speak to your question, Justice Goodwin, regarding whether the Galtex pilots are a for-profit corporation, they're really not an entity at all. And I'd like to clarify that for the court to the extent it was not clear in the briefs. The association is really just a colloquial term. They're not an entity at all. The pilots are all independent contractors. And so there is no entity here that's being challenged. They simply call themselves an association, just like any lawyer who's licensed in the Austin area would call themselves a member of the Austin Bar. And those pilots assist the board in carrying out the statutory duty that the board has of determining when more pilots are needed. It does this when the... Yes?
Let me go back to that point. Because you can't be a member of the Austin Bar unless you actually pay to be a member of the Austin Bar. Are there dues So I read that it's not an official organization, but are there dues to this organization? Are there meetings? Do they have any kind of charter or anything like that?
I'm not aware of any charter. I'm also not aware of any dues. I do believe that my interpretation of it is that once you were licensed as a branch pilot, you were considered a Galveston County pilot within that association. Now, any deputies are not members because deputies are not licensed pilots. And this is an association of anyone who is a pilot within the profession in Galveston County.
So you don't have to pay dues to become a member?
I believe at times they may ask for contributions for one thing or the other, but I don't know of any mandatory dues.
Okay.
In addition to the duty of determining whether more pilots are needed, which the board relies on Galtex for, it also assists the board in its duties of examining and determining whether an applicant meets the statutory requirements to become a deputy or branch pilot. The board has asked the Galveston, Texas City pilots to collect applications and then to forward them to the board. Galtex collects these applications, and then the board weeds out the ones that do not comply with the statutory mandates. From that pool, the board then forwards the applications that meet the statutory criteria back to the pilots, and then it accepts recommendations from any pilots regarding applicants that the pilots believe would be good licensed pilots. Then after a deputy, I'm sorry.
So under the deputy pilot application procedure, I thought the board is the one who sent out the Galtex, put the notice in the paper. The board's the one who received the applications.
No, Your Honor. So the board decides when there's a need for more pilots, and they'll put a call out in the Professional Mariner magazine, the literature that is common for the profession. Then the board has asked Galtex to collect all of those applications merely out of practicality because they are there in Galveston County and are readily available. Then Galtex does not do anything with those applications. It forwards them directly to the board. The board then evaluates based on the application criteria, and that can be found at page 140 of the record. Based on that criteria, the board determines here are all the applicants that meet the statutory requirements in the statute. From that point, the board forwards them back to any existing pilot, and then it will accept recommendations, just like if you were reviewing a resume for any profession, and it will accept recommendations on who the existing pilots believe would be a good candidate for a deputy or branch license. Once an applicant has been accepted as a deputy pilot, he then undergoes the 2-year statutorily mandated training period. And that training period happens under an existing licensed branch pilot, and for good reason. Section 62.045 of the statute states that a branch pilot is responsible for the actions of his deputy. So it makes perfect sense to require that a branch pilot have a choice on who his deputy is because he's responsible for all of his actions. Once that 2-year statutory period is completed, then the branch pilot who is overseeing the apprenticeship can recommend that deputy for licensing as a branch pilot. The board, however, possesses the exclusive authority to actually grant that license and then to recommend that pilot to the governor to receive his commission.
So what happens if somebody, a pilot, was to comply with the application and comply with all the process, but that application is sent to the board as opposed to Galtex?
That would be up to the board and its rules. The statute does require that an application be submitted in accordance with board rule. The understanding right now and what was communicated to the appellants via Chairman Kankaba is that the board's rule is to submit all applications to Galtex, and that is so that they have one central location who is gathering all of the applications that can then be forwarded to the board in a nice and controlled manner rather than them receiving them via email one day after the other. It keeps the process more streamlined.
So as I understand procedurally how we're here, we've got the competing motions for summary judgment. One says APA doesn't apply on one of the grounds. One of the other alleged grounds was no unconstitutional monopoly. This is, I'm kind of paraphrasing from y'all. And then the other one is no jurisdiction because the board should have been sued, not the commissioners. Y'all moved for no unconstitutional monopoly. Is all of this argument a part of the unconstitutional monopoly disposition, or is it part of wrong people being sued? I mean, where does this fit in what this court is going to be reviewing, which is the two motions for summary judgment that were granted versus the one that was denied?
Yes, this all goes to the pilot's motion for summary judgment and reasons why it should be affirmed, specific to the monopoly challenge. Because, as I just laid out, Galveston, Texas City Pilots only operate in an advisory role. They do not have a monopoly over the system. This is further supported when you review the history of the Texas anti-monopoly provision and the cases interpreting it. The Texas compulsory pilotage statute was enacted in the first legislature in 1846, and that was merely months after the anti-monopoly provision was included in the Texas Constitution of 1845. In fact, 16 framers of the Constitution were also in that first legislature when the Texas compulsory pilotage statute was passed. Early cases interpreting the anti-monopoly provision focused on invalidating exclusive grants that were to the detriment of the public. For example, the first case interpreting the provision in 1881, City of Brenham v. Becker, invalidated an exclusive right to operate a city's fish and meat market because it was granted without due regard to the rights of the people of the public. Shortly after, in 1899, the Court of Criminal Appeals upheld an exclusive grant in Janin v. State because that exclusive grant to sell train tickets was given with the due regard for the safety of the people and protecting them from fraudulent ticket sales in mind.
When was Galtex formed?
I don't think there's an answer to that because it's, again, not a formal association. It dates back as far as you could date the profession back.
So early 1900s, it was loosely called Galtex?
There's actually some evidence that it existed back during the Republic of Texas.
Okay, and were the procedures for the applications always the same?
I'm not sure. I would imagine not. I think my understanding of it is it was quite unregulated then. In fact, in the Interport pilots case from New Jersey that is cited in our brief beginning around page 40, during that time, people would even take boats out into the Galveston Bay, and then there would be no way of knowing whether they were licensed at all. And so really there was no set established scheme for determining whether people were qualified or whether they were licensed until Texas enacted its compulsory pilotage statute in 1846.
And do you know how many members of Galtex are related to former Galtex members?
I don't know that number, actually. There is a provision, as was alluded to by the state, there is an anti-nepotism provision that has been enacted by the board. I'm just not sure, to your question, how far back that provision was in effect. Even if it were not, however, the nepotistic statutes like the ones in Louisiana have been upheld. For example, in Koch, the United States Supreme Court upheld such a provision.
And is your position that your client's position that they are a monopoly, but under the Constitution, I mean, they're not an unallowed monopoly because they serve a purpose, or that they're not even a monopoly?
I think both arguments. The first is that we are not a monopoly. Rather, they are just independent contractors, individual pilots. And then if the court does not agree and feels that it is monopolistic, then even a monopolistic type entity is allowed under the Texas anti-monopoly provision when it is created to serve a legitimate public safety role. I see my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Just a few points. The appellees on both sides of the appellee, their argument is not consistent with the record. Let's start at the beginning. This began back in 2015, I believe. I sent an email to then Chairman Vandy Anderson, Chairman of the Board of Commissioners, saying, how does one apply to become a pilot in Galveston County outside of the Galveston, Texas
City? That's the email chain that's attached to your petition, yes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Gotcha.
And he basically said, you don't. So leaving us with the question is, how does one get a license without the support of Galtex, the private for-profit organization? The short answer is you do not. The safety argument has been squarely shot down by the Federal Trade Commission. There's nothing in the record, if we're looking at it on a summary judgment perspective. It's the state's burden under Ewald, Lens Express Ewald, we must prove the possession of monopoly power and the willful acquisition or maintenance of that power as distinguished from growth or development as a consequence of a superior product, business acumen, or historical accident. As this court says in Ewald, on a motion for summary judgment, the burden is on the state to to prove that no genuine issue of material fact exists with respect to at least one of those elements. That has not, that did not bear out at the trial court and is not bearing out here. They have not given the court a straight answer on even if it is in the existence of a monopoly, but I will tell you that that has been essentially admitted at the trial court. It's in the record. A monopoly is not necessarily about pricing, as the state has said, but it is defined by Blacks, a privilege or peculiar advantage vested in one or more persons or companies consisting in the exclusive right or power to carry on a particular business or trade, a form of market structure in which one or only a few firms dominate the total sales of a product or service. In this case, the service is the pilotage of ships. The pilots have the burden, or the state has the burden to show that there's some fact question on these things. We've conclusively proven that there is a monopoly. Their argument is it's just a lawful monopoly because of the state's interest in public safety. That argument about public safety has been squarely shot down in this court, in this state, as well as at the Fifth Circuit and in the United States Supreme Court, and that's the Houston Pilots versus Goodwin case from 1944, Moody versus McGee, which is the Fifth Circuit case of 1930, and Sherlock versus Alling, which is the Supreme Court United States case of 1876. The license is merely a certificate of competence. The courts uniformly held that the pilot is not discharging any official duty. They are acting merely in a private capacity as a servant to the vessel owner. And on top of that, the pilots enjoy limited liability. They have a $1,000 limit of liability. I don't know of any other profession in the state that enjoys that kind of limit of liability. But you may have heard of the Costco Busan incident in San Francisco Bay, where a pilot rammed a tanker into the Golden Gate Bridge and walked.
But that's not the basis of your statutory challenge, is it?
No, it's just the fact that they are not state officials and that the interest of the state in there is no public safety interest in a monopoly. There may be in licensing, but not in a monopoly. And that's so, not a distinction to be so overlooked.
So which is you think is your best argument? Is it the facial challenge or is it the as applied? And if it's the as applied, how do we get around that y'all didn't submit an application?
We did submit, as applied, I think, is probably the stronger of the two.
Okay.
Notwithstanding the statutory requirement on its face that you have to be hand selected by one of the existing pilots.
It does not refer to Galtex. It does say that you have to be hand selected by a pilot, but it doesn't say by them.
They're the only game in town, so okay. I think it's more as applied.
I see.
But
thank
I
you.
Guess my question following that up is, your clients didn't submit an application, which even to the board, which has nothing to do with Galtex, which asks for references, which asks for criminal history, which asks for a lot of things that I think the board can ask for. Your clients didn't comply with any of that.
The only rules that were in place for making an application, and we've briefed this issue, and it's in the record extensively, the only form that you can submit is, say you wanted to apply to clerk at Vincent and Elkins, and the only form that you are able to fill out is Baker Botts's form. That does not match. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't make
Why
any sense.
Why do you say it's a Galtex form when there's nothing in Galtex that it doesn't reference Galtex?
Yes,
and
it does.
And if I understand the procedure correctly, the board is the one who sends out the applications.
That is not the case. As Justice Phillips actually recognized in a memorandum that we've included in the record about the process, and it's also been discussed in one of the federal cases out of the Southern District in Galveston about the process, how it originates, how does it start? It starts when the Galtex pilots themselves say, we have somebody retiring or we want somebody else to come join our group. And at that point, they tell the board, and the board says, and this is what Chairman Anderson said, at that point, then the board will put notice out in the maritime publications and solicit the applications at that point. But the process does not begin and end with the governor or with the board, but really with Galtex. And so in the form itself, it says, thank you for your interest in joining the Galveston, Texas City Pilots organization. And it also requires that the applicants release the private Galtex organization in the background check and otherwise protected HIPAA information and things like that.
I'm talking about the application. So you've got the Dear Applicant one, which even though it comes from the Board of Pilot Commissioners, does state the Galveston, Texas City Pilots appreciate your interest. But I'm talking about the actual deputy pilot application for the ports of Galveston County, which is 143 through 152. There's no mention of Galtex on that. So why not use this form instead of the application that you signed, which I guess looks more like a pleading than a...
We asked the chairman, and he basically said there were no rules other than with respect to Galtex. And those rules, in our opinion, are no rules at all because they're outside of the APA, and they're only particular to Galtex. So if there's no option or there's no rules to make an application, we did the best that we could with the expectation that the board may, of course, follow up if they were acting truly independently and not protective of the monopoly to say, okay, well, we've got two federally licensed pilots with the endorsements for this waterway. And that's something. That's another thing, the qualifications. Two of our appellants, plaintiffs, they do the same thing. They can write the chart from memory. That's in order for them to get the endorsement from the federal government. Now, I was going to bring two ships in here, two little model tankers, exactly the same. One has a U.S. flag. The other one has, say, a Panamanian flag. They can be technically the exact same vessels, but because of this monopolistic protection, you cannot, the federal pilots cannot bring in the same vessel if it has a Panamanian flag. They can bring in the U.S. flag, but not the Panamanian flag. So
because
technically,
that's a rule under...
That's the state pilotage rules that are in place because back when we formed our nation, Congress did not interfere with the state regulation of pilotage, and they said until Congress sees fit to act on the issue of state pilotage, it's going to be left up to the states.
Correct, but that's not before us.
Beg your pardon?
That's not before us. Whether
no, it's not. But that's the argument that they're making, is saying, oh, well, this issue's been tested before, and it's all been under the federal constitution, and that's why we looked to the state constitution for guidance and assistance here.
So remind me again, when you applied for your clients, for the appellants, what was the response from the board?
They didn't quite know what to do at first, and then they said they were not going to entertained them. They were not going to deem them as applications because they were not on the Galtex forms or pursuant to the Galtex requirements.
And do we have that response in the record?
There's no record. It's not denied, but it is what happened. I think that...
No, I'm saying there wasn't a written response.
No, and I believe Ms. Roark mentioned what Chairman Concaba said at the time was that they were not going to be entertained at all. They were not going to be deemed even applications. They were not going to be considered because they were not on the Galtex forms. That's uncontroverted. So again, getting back to the standard here, and this is a de novo case before this court, the summary judgment record on the monopoly issue and on the state's burden, I think they have failed to raise the issue about they didn't even really argue it with respect to the existence of the monopoly, again punting and saying this is all a safety thing, and that's not consistent with what our evidence says, that safety does not warrant a monopoly. That's base argument, just mere argument, no support whatsoever in the record. The appellants have actually put support from the Federal Trade Commission on this very issue with respect to ship pilotage, saying that there is nothing that says that safety warrants a private monopoly. Safety may warrant licensing, but not a private monopoly. So we feel we carried our burden on the summary judgment issue, and the state failed to, and the appellees failed to as well.
And I have one last question. Why do you believe that you're not required to sue the board as opposed to the individual members of the board in bringing your rulemaking challenge?
Because they are not inside the APA. The governor is. And on top of that, they are acting ultra vires in any event. So these are not acts of the state, as we've briefed. I mean, these are acts of protectionist individuals who are subject to the pressures of the monopoly, who wants to keep their monopoly. And I think I really don't understand how any court in this state could say that these quote-unquote rules are rules when they are admittedly outside of the APA. What are they? They may be particular to Galtex, sure, but then that leaves the question of how does anybody who doesn't want to apply to Galtex become a pilot or make an application? And you just can't do it.
Thank you, Mr. Renshaw.
Thank you.
And with that, the case will be submitted. And we are adjourned.
Thank you.
All please rise.